Okay, I'd like to call the planning commission meeting October 15th, 2012 to order. Kim, could you take the roll call, please?
Chairman Lutz? Commissioner Dimmers?
Here.
Commissioner Dirksen?
Here.
Commissioner Christensen?
Here.
Commissioner Lovland?
Here.
Commissioner Sherwood?
Here.
Commissioner Tuttle?
Here.
Thank you, Kim. Okay, this is the time we've set aside for comments from citizens. Anyone in the audience that would like to make any comments that are not listed on the agenda this evening is invited to come up and speak. Anybody comes up, we ask you to limit your time to 5 minutes. Anybody? Show of hands? No? Okay. Let's move on then to approval of minutes. We have minutes from April 9th. Do I hear any discussion or motions?
I'd like to make a comment.
Okay.
And Kim, it's a really minor one, but Mr. Hoffman's actually talked about it. Thank you.
Anything else?
I'd move with the minutes of April 9th, that has changed.
I'll second.
Okay, we have Wayne Lovland, Commissioner Lovland has moved to accept the minutes and seconded by Commissioner Dimmers. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, minutes from April 23rd.
In the second paragraph on the last page, it says, Commissioner Sherwood inquired if the city council zoning has had any legal input. I think that word zoning doesn't belong there.
I would agree with that.
Okay. Any other comments? Motion?
Make a motion with minutes of April 23rd, 2012, with the one noted change on page 505, the approved.
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Dimmers to approve the April 23rd minutes, seconded by Commissioner Dirksen. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you. Okay, that's all we have on the approval of minutes tonight. We move to our public hearing. And please excuse me, this is my first chance at doing a public hearing as the vice chair. So the application that we're going to for first is the CPA 2013 school mitigation fees. And ZCA 2012-09 school litigation fees. We're going to have Paul Popalka is going to get a discussion on this, and we'll move on there.
Mr. Chairman, if I may make a comment first,
yes.
Just for the record to disclose that I've had some brief communications with a developer in the community on this topic, and also had discussions with a school board member on the topic, and just wanted to make that a part of the record.
Okay. Does anybody have any comments or questions about that? Concerns? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. This first item tonight for a public hearing is about two or three different things. One is amending the city comprehensive plan, the capital facilities element or chapter of that plan, and that is to consider adopting the Monroe and Stillish capital facilities plans that have just been updated and approved. These are the 2012-2017 plans, which are done every 2 years. One action is, as part of this action, is to make the decision whether to adopt these into our comprehensive plan, something that's typically done every other year with these, along with things like sewer, water, transportation, capital facilities. This is being considered separately as part of our budget process, which is why it's up before this group now, and we'll go to council over the next few weeks. So the adoption of the capital facilities plans, we've also looked at revising some language in our present comprehensive plan that changes some language, cleans up some language, and removes some regulatory language in favor of moving that to the Monroe Municipal Code or the Zoning Code. And that brings up the second part of this action tonight, which is approval or recommendation for revising the Monroe Municipal Code Chapter 20. It was one of the attachments, section called School Impact Mitigation Fee Program. That involves cleaning up some language and updating this to reflect changes that have been done in the comp plan. And both of these also reflect the fact that we're now considering plans from both Snohomish and the Monroe school districts. In the past, it was just the Monroe districts. Now we have two districts within city limits, and we have both plans to consider. We're looking for potentially a recommendation tonight to the city council for both of these actions, the comp plan and the zoning code. But depending on what happens with the public hearing and discussion with the commission, we also have the option of considering this further and taking it to our next meeting, which will be on October 22nd, our next regular meeting on the 22nd. So we have that option depending on what we discuss tonight. And you did just receive this evening the fact sheet about impact fees. That's a very brief overview. We can perhaps talk in more detail about the different points of this as we proceed, but I think at this point I'd turn back to you, Mr. Chair, and open for some discussion.
Okay, commissioners? Okay, Commissioner Gunn.
I have lots of questions ultimately, but I'd like to just try to get some clarification first off. I feel like I'm drowning in numbers here. I've got the school district capital facilities plan, I've got our proposed ordinance, I've got our comp plan, I've got the MSR research, and I guess it comes down to one basic question in my mind at this point. Is it correct that I'm interpreting this to say that a two-bedroom apartment in Monroe will be charged more for school mitigation fees than a single-family house? That is correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Can someone explain the rationale to me?
Ralph, would you like to invite Ralph to respond to that?
My name is Ralph Yingling. I'm the director of facilities for the Monroe School District, and I live at 23719 150th Street, Southeast Monroe. Normally, and I say normally start speaking to past plans have always had a higher fee for single-family homes. But I believe in Monroe, from what our data shows, is we have seen a move of families with school-aged children away from single-family homes, and into multi-family homes. Therefore, the generation rate, which is one of the factors involved in calculating the fee, has gone up for multiple family homes and down for single family homes. When you use that change in that factor, it changes the fees. We're getting more kids than we used to from apartments, basically.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
That's all for now.
Anyone else? Okay, I'm going to open up then to the audience. And I'm going to go for, first of all, I'm going to go off of the list of the people who signed up to speak tonight. I do ask that you come up to the podium here, speak your name, your address, and then I'll ask you if your testimony is going to be true, yes or no, and we'll go from there, okay? First name I have here is
Mr. Chairman, I'm just curious if staff has a presentation they want to make before we enter the public testimony portion of the hearing.
I think that was your...
Nothing further at this point.
Thanks.
Thank you. First name I have here is Nancy Pierce, is that correct?
Yeah, close.
Before we even have this one.
The last name is Truett Pierce, so the full name is Nancy Truett Pierce. Address is 12003 Woods Creek Road, Monroe, 9272.
And is the testimony you're about to give proceeding as the truth?
It is. Yes, thank you. And I'm here as a citizen tonight. I'm also on the school board. I'm not representing the school board with this testimony. This is my own individual evaluation situation. I wanted you to know, as the Planning Commission, that I started out when I first heard this pretty conflicted about it, because I think growth is good for Monroe. And I think it's good for our small businesses downtown and for all the services that we have here. So I took my time to really study it, because my first priority is to the taxpayers, especially in the school district, and I wanted to really understand it. One of the things I did was take time to build out a pretty complex Excel program so I could model different aspects of this. And I'd be glad to sit down with any of you and go through some of those numbers and my assumptions inside that. So here's what I learned and currently how I'm thinking about it. First, I think the first premise is that growth is good. The second premise that I really want you to think about is the very best engine for growth in any town is the quality of its schools. It attracts development faster than anything else ever will for this town. One of my key points I want you to understand is that the taxing district for schools, the taxing approach for schools is different from the city. And I think you probably all know that, but just to make sure everybody's clear on it. We have when we pass a bond or a levy, we set a single number, we ask the community to support that, and we divide that across our tax base. In the city, that what that means for the school district is that if you add more houses, we don't get more money. What we get is the tax spread further. And that's part of the real conflict I have with this going in, because if we do add more houses, it's possible that our taxpayers pay less per house because it's the same number just spread further. It's part of why I really wanted to understand it through modeling it out so I could understand the impacts and where are the break points for that. It depends on two things. How much capacity do you have in your schools? And what's the life cycle stage of your school facilities? So if you have room in your schools and your schools are in pretty good shape, you don't need as much support to build new schools. That's true of the town of Snohomish, by the way. They passed a $500 million bond a few years back, built a new high school, remodeled their old high school, built out more facilities, and fixed their facilities. Unfortunately, in Monroe, we're at a really different point in our facilities life cycle for our schools. Number one, we're way over capacity already. We have 34 portables housing upwards of 800 kids. Today, we have about $90 million in deferred maintenance today. We have an HVAC system that's way out of date at Salem Woods Elementary. Our district office doesn't even have air conditioning. So right now, today, we're behind the eight ball. Snohomish, on the other hand, is pretty far ahead of it. They're in pretty good shape. So they can have a lower mitigation, and it'll work better for them. Here in Monroe, it's not the time for us to give up any of the mitigation money, because we're already in trouble, and we're going to have to make that up down the road. Kind of my final point for you, it's not optional to provide schools. When they come, we have to make space for them. So that's got to happen. As soon as we see kids, we're going to have room for them in the schools, and we're already over capacity. So I would ask you to look at other ways you can make this town competitive, because I think it would be good for it to be competitive, and make school mitigation your absolutely last resort because, as I said, we're already in trouble with school mitigation. Thank you.
Thank you. The next name we have here is Vicki Mullen.
Vicki Mullen, 10312 210th Street Southeast, Snohomish, Washington, 98296.
Excuse me, your testimony about the view of this truth?
Yes. One thing that I think we need to make sure we clear up is there's two things being talked about here. One, when we hear the term mitigation fees, and then another when we hear the impact fees, and they are the same to most people, but I think they're referred to in your paperwork as impact fees. After the last time I was here a couple of weeks ago, did some more research on things to find out the facts the best we could to get out to the public so they would know what was going on. And two things here, you talk about your capital facilities plan, and that's one thing, but I think the thing that I'm most concerned about is the change in the impact fees, the actual dollar amount change in the impact fees, or percentage as it would be called. And I don't know if you've been able to have seen any of these, but these were some posters and flyers and things that we've gotten out to the community to urge the, first of all, to urge the school district to have an official position, which they do, and I'm assuming someone may be giving that tonight, or you got a letter from them that talks about their official position. We have gone to them and asked for them, and I think they state that they're adamantly opposed to a change in the fees, but I'm sure you have a letter from their president there. And then what we stated on here was that we just didn't want to say no to reducing of the impact fees for the same reasons that Nancy Truitt Pierce spoke of as far as capacity and things. And I do have a list of all the different, you know, a number of different districts within Snohomish County, schools, parks, traffic. It's not just the impact fees of schools that need to be looked at. As when you look at the total impact to a developer, you need to look at more than just that. We are very competitive, even with the fees, the impact fee that we have now. We're very competitive with Marysville, Michael Teo. I mean, it's still, as long as you add up, you know, all of the fees. So, and I'm not sure if you have that information or not, but I have copies of that. And then there's, like I said, and we do have a handout that we will put out. If anyone has any other questions or need any help, I'm against any change in the impact fee schedule.
Thank you. Next name is Jim Scott.
My name is Jim Scott. I am director and vice president of the school board. I live at 20227 80th Avenue Southeast, Snohomish, 98296.
And the testimony about the game is the truth?
Yes.
Thank you.
You should have received a copy of the October 9th letter from the president of our board, John McIntyre, stating some of the key reasons why the school district opposes any change to a discount rate. I'm here to share a few additional reasons. First, I'd like to tell you that in the early 80s, or late 80s and early 90s, when the Growth Management Act was being created, enacted, and implemented, I had the honor of serving on the Planning Commission and then the City Council for the City of Clyde Hill. And during that time, I was also the appointed representative to the Suburban Cities Association and the Puget Sound Council of Governments, which later became the Puget Sound Regional Council. I spent many a long evening in those functions talking about the impacts of the Growth Management Act on small cities and both the intended and the unintended consequences that would come about. I came away from that experience firmly convinced of the need for development to pay at least a portion of the cost of infrastructure needs created by that development. And believe me, what the mitigation fees are is a small portion of the actual cost, even without discounts. One of the issues was that considerable problems had been created prior to the Growth Management Act, because the growth came in, the infrastructure was needed, and the vast majority of small communities have absolutely no ability to finance the needed infrastructure that resulted from that growth. In this case, we're talking about school-related infrastructure. And the city's position is that by cutting the net school mitigation fees by one-third, it will attract more residential development. Yet everything I've ever seen on the subject says that the number one factor in where people decide to live is the quality of the local schools. That being the case, I simply cannot understand why the community, why the city would do anything to damage the quality of its local schools, but that is exactly what a lack of finances will do. From talking with those responsible for Monroe City government at the time that the discount rate of 25% was enacted, I've learned that it didn't come from the school district. It came from those in power at the time in recognition of the tremendous damage that had been caused to the Monroe schools by the previous growth cycle. You know, for years we were adjusting school boundaries, adjusting grade level bands, and moving kids from classroom to classroom in order to fit kids into any kind of a learning facility. Those changes were not made by choice. They were made out of necessity because we simply didn't have the room. Nobody in power after that ever wanted to see that happen again, and that's why we deviated from the standard of 50% deduction in Snohomish County to the 25%. But from what I understand, Snohomish County is the only county in the state that discounts mitigation fees at all. Everybody else realizes that to attract new residents, you need quality schools. Overcrowded schools, rife with instability in its education model, deters residential growth rather than attracting it. And that is exactly what will happen here. Sufficient revenue isn't available to house a growing student population. I also question the need for a change. Since I understand from Mr. Sachs's previous comments, I have listened to your last Planning Commission recording, that over 260 new dwelling units are already in the pipeline, even though the city has listed for the last several years a mitigation rate for schools of over $4,700. The current capital facilities plan from the district suggests a rate with the 25% discount of less than $3,000 per unit for a single family home already. Isn't that a big enough cut? You are all planners. How would you suggest the school district should plan to make up for the lost revenue from this proposal in time to house the 160 kids that are projected to come from those 260 new homes to be built over the next 18 to 24 months, when we still have 850 kids in 34 portables left over from the last growth cycle that we haven't yet been able to provide permanent housing for? Something that was said earlier brought another item to my mind that I hadn't written down, but that is removing it from the comp plan and having control of this under the city ordinance. That sure wasn't the intention of the original growth management plan. When that was enacted, the idea was to have all planning from a common source, and that's why cities have comp plans that have to take into consideration school district facilities plans. And that they have to be renewed on a two-year cycle. That gives school districts ample time to plan for any changes and any increase of growth. Moving it out of the comp plan and putting it in ordinance gives the council the right to change that rate or eliminate it anytime they want to and as often as they want to. And they may say, well, that's not our intention, we're only going to review it once a year. But they have the authority to change any ordinance as often as they want. In the comp plan, that is not the case, and that concerns me. I think it belongs in the comp plan because it is part of this community's basic planning needs. So, for the benefit of our kids' education and for the good of this community, I urge you to recommend against any change in the discount rate unless that change is to eliminate the discount altogether. so the next growth cycle doesn't become a repeat of the last one. Thank you.
Thank you. Meredith Macklin.
Good evening. Meredith Macklin, 13624 Chain Lake Road in Washington. This is the city limits.
Testimony you're about to give, is it true?
Yes.
Thank you.
I would just acknowledge the good points made this evening. I would like to agree with Nancy Truitt Pierce, Vicki Mullen, and Jim Scott so far, 100% on target for what I wanted to say, so I'm not going to repeat what they already said. But I would just like to say that I really agree with what Jim Scott said as far as taking this out of the Monroe Comprehensive Plan. I think that we need to have some kind of past history. We need to know, I think I said this before at the last meeting, but the comp plan is something that just shouldn't be changed. You know, it's set up that way so that it's not changed frequently. That there's supposed to be a lot of public input, a lot of thought that goes into it. And I just think that it would be not in the community's best interest to take this issue out of the comp plan. I spoke with Brad Feilberg, the city planner, or public works director, about the 260-some-odd houses that are in the pipeline, and he said that none of them have applied for permits yet. So it kind of almost makes me wonder if this thing is being rushed so that these people that have not yet applied for permits will get benefit of a lower rate. And I hope that's not the case. But anyway, thank you very much for hearing me. Thank you.
Thank you. Rob Mainline.
Again, my name is Rob Mainline, and I live at 2371 950th Street. I had not planned to testify. I was here to answer questions about the capital facilities plan on itself and any questions about that. However, in doing some reading of the proposed ordinance, I would suggest that before you make your recommendation, you carefully investigate the timelines for spending any mitigation fees. I believe the ordinance currently, or as proposed revision would say, must be spent in 6 years with provisions for extension. But I also believe if you investigate carefully, you'll find the state law says it's 10 years. Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
How did we get here? Have you been in this position for?
I've been in this position for 22 years.
Okay, so you have the history. So how did we get in this position where we have 850 children in portables? Is the school growing right now? Is it stable?
School enrollment right now is declining slightly. However, projections by OFM show that it will be increasing. We are currently unhoused at the secondary level. Future projections show unhoused students at both the middle school and the high school level. You asked me a question of how we get to where we are, and it's a horribly complex question. One thing I can tell you is the planning, bond passing, building of houses, building schools is a very, very long process. It doesn't happen slowly. It does happen slowly. It doesn't happen overnight. The district has always had some portables. As the district got large influxes of children from large developments in the Monroe area, we, as Jim Director Scott said, began moving children here, there, and everywhere. As we continued to grow, we had to add portables to house those children. And part of that's an educational decision, about what's best for children, and then putting them in this school and in that school, and then changing the boundaries is not good for their education. Therefore, portables were needed to house them temporarily until schools can be built. Mitigation fees are an integral part of the Monroe School District's building program. For example, when we built Fylands Elementary,
$1 million worth of that school was paid for by mitigation fees.
So, I think last time you said the balance was about $600,000, was that, did I remember that correctly, or was that not?
I don't have the balance at hand.
A little over $400,000.
Thank you. So, to put this in context, if we have 260 houses come in and the charge is roughly $3,000 per house, that is $840,000. My math is right. Can you put that in perspective of what it will cost to construct permanent facilities that not only take care of, you know, where we're at now, but where we're projected to be in the next 10 or 12 years? I think it was Mr. Scott said that $900 million bond was passed in this storm.
A little over $500 million.
Okay, thank you.
Since 2004, in two separate bond issues.
So, if we collect $1 million in mitigation fees, and we put that in perspective of having a need of $250 or $500 million, it's a couple percentage points. And I realize that's not trivial, because money is money. But is there another way? It seems like this is a very small part of the picture that's being painted here. Okay? So how do we get from where we're at to where we need to go? These mitigation fees ain't gonna cut. This just isn't, I mean, it's I realize it's important. Okay? I mean, $1 million for his bylaw on 1-3, that was at $5, $6, $10 million facility, whatever it was. I mean, that was significant. But if you have a fund of $1 million in light of the $250 million need, it seems to me that there's something structurally wrong here with how this picture is being administered.
Mitigation fees are specifically prohibited from paying the entire cost. Okay? Therefore, they pay a portion of the cost of needed infrastructure upgrades. To go along with that, you must, as a school district, pass a bond and get usually some state superintendent of public instruction matching funds to build a school. So it takes those three things. It takes the mitigation fees, it takes the bond fees, it takes the matching funds from the state. Typically, with mitigation fees, there's only several things they can be used for. New construction, modifications of things to house more children can sometimes be done, land purchases, and portables. Most recently, we've purchased more portables.
Because that's most efficient. So, then let me narrow the scope of my question. If we are just looking at facilities to which the mitigation fees would be applicable, what is the extent of that need in total? Do you have a rough idea?
I can help that.
Please do.
It costs us about $160,000.
Excuse me. Could you mind coming to the mic?
Sure.
Can we get you on tape? Thank you.
It costs us approximately $160,000 to provide a portable and equip that portable for every 25 kids. So that should give you an idea. We don't consider mitigation fees to be the end all for solving our facilities problems. We have to have community approval and bond issues to get that done. What the mitigation fees have allowed us to do is keep up with growth by providing portables as a temporary fix so that we can house the influx of students. Last time we were talking about going to all year-round school in order to house kids, and that's before my time, so I'm, you know, relating information that I've heard secondhand. But we were just out of options, and we are once again out of options. We're already over capacity. And we need the mitigation money in order to provide the influx of kids. The 260 houses that Jeff indicated were in the pipeline, although I don't understand how anything gets in the pipeline and permits haven't been applied for, but that's another story. But that 260 housing units you know, based on the projections of the recent past, we'll provide 160 new students. We don't have a place to put those 160 new students. And they're not going to show up in neat, even 23 student per classroom bundles at the schools in the neighborhoods that are appropriate. They're going to show up all over the district, not where we have any capacity. By being able to provide portals at local schools to house those new kids, we can relatively quickly, within, what did it take us to do the last portals? About 10 months from board approval through the permit process, through ordering the proper units, through ordering all the materials needed inside the units, the desks, the closets, you know, all the equipment and so on. It took about 10 months before we could occupy those new portals. excuse me. That's what mitigation dollars do for us, is provide us that timeline. Whereas if we have to wait for a bond issue, first of all, there's no assurance that the bond issue will be passed by the community. And even if it is, it's a 3 to 4 year process by the time you plan the bond issue, go out for election, do the design work, go through the permitting phase, and then actually start building the schools. It's 3 to 4 years before we can put kids in classrooms from the time that that process begins. Portables let us do it in 10 months. So that's why we rely on mitigation to help with the temporary needs.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Another question.
Is there any bond issues at this point that are in the process
before
covering some of this?
Over the course of this year, we will be starting a new community group to advise us on our facilities needs. We did it in 2010, and that bond issue was defeated by the voters. So we will be doing it again over the course of this year. And, you know, from the information gathered by that group, we will make a decision about how to move forward as far as bonds. You know, it's been so long since we passed a bond that in 2016, we will have zero capital facility debt. All of our bonds will be paid for completely by the end of 2016. So that's not necessarily a good thing, because normally you want to keep them rolling. But we've been unable to secure the approval of the community over the last 10 years. And so that's the position that we're in.
Hey, Jim, will you clarify the OSPI operations versus capital? That was information last time.
You will have seen, or maybe you've already seen it, the information about, well, new students bring new money. Well, new students do bring new money, but it's new learning money. It's not new capital facilities money. So we give money to buy books and to pay for teachers with each new student that comes. I think this year it's about $8,600 per student or something in that range. But we need nothing from the state to house those kids. We have to do that on our own. So that's where mitigation fees came in. They can't be used for learning. They can only be used for housing. You need to have both when the kids show up. And like was said earlier, we can't turn any child away. We have to accept them all. We have to find room for them all. And that leads to overcrowded classrooms. That leads to rapidly changing attendance boundaries, moving kids around the community, doing all kinds of things that is absolutely no good for their education, but that we have no choice, because we have no choice in accepting the children.
I have one question. Are we renting these portables, or are we purchasing these portables?
We purchase them, because you can't really rent them. They don't want them back. But so far, we found ways to continue using them. We've gotten rid of some portables recently that I think were originally purchased back in the 50s.
They were 45 plus years old. We still have some that are that age right now.
And we don't have kids in all of them, but we are still using them for storage and for you know, other uses. We're not trying to teach kids in them because they're too old. The 34 that we're talking about are the good ones. But we do have kids.
Commissioner?
Question from Mr. Jane.
Yes, sir.
In your capital facilities plan, the impact fee worksheet. It's a general question.
Okay.
I'm sure you know it quite well. Is the worksheet the same for the county and the city of Monroe?
The worksheets are exactly the same. However, in the very last portion, where it says impact fee calculation, there's a two-page worksheet for each type of housing. The second last line will say less county discount or less city discount. Okay. That's the difference.
Thank you. Does the school district make up the worksheet or does it come from somewhere?
The school, the worksheet is required by the county to meet the requirements of GMA. We just populate the worksheet with figures.
So the county has designed this worksheet then?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I know that in our proposed ordinance, we have the terms of a worksheet set forth. Are all of those terms the same as what this is?
Or I believe it's a mirror of the methodology and the district plan as prescribed by the county.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Jane. Any more questions? Okay. Thank you. Jennifer Anderson.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Anderson. I'm the Salson Ocean County Manager of the Master Builders Association. My address is 335-116 Southeast, Bellevue, 98004.
And your testimony you're about to give is the truth?
Yes.
Thank you.
On behalf of nearly 3,000 member companies of the Master Builders Association of King and Snohomish County, I would like to offer our support of the proposed comprehensive plan amendment relating to the school mitigation fees. We support this measure to increase the discount from 25 to 50% of the cost listed in the capital facilities plan, as is done in most other jurisdictions in Snohomish County. This measure is an important component to encourage local economic development and keep Monroe competitive. It is estimated that building 100 single-family homes will generate $28.3 million in local income, $4.3 million in taxes and other revenue for local government, and 317 local jobs. Additionally, after the construction phase ends, the annual reoccurring benefits of these homes include $4 million in local income, $1.1 million in taxes and other revenue, and 50 local jobs. These numbers were provided by a study done by the National Association of Homeowners, done in March of 2012. The Monroe School District has recently reported a loss of 238 students this year, which means there's capacity to support this growth. The city's measure to increase the impact fee discount is in line with this reported loss. Impact tax is intended to support new growth, not maintenance. Each new student who comes to the school district is supported by state allocated funds that go towards operations such as teachers and textbooks. Quality schools are a key consideration for home buyers. However, the best way I know to support schools is a thriving local economy. This proposal will help to create jobs in Monroe, which serves everyone well, including schools. The MBA strongly encourages your support of this measure and to increase the school mitigation fee discount.
Thank you. Questions for Ms.
Anderson? Any questions?
Yes. The comment was made earlier that perhaps Snohomish County was one of the only counties in the state that discounts mitigation.
Yeah, I'm not actually sure, but I can get back to you on that. I can look into that. I know that most of Snohomish County offers the discount, in fact, maybe all of it, other than Monroe.
I'm just curious about other counties.
But I'm not sure about the other counties. I can definitely look into that and get back to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Ryan Urban, or Nick Urban, I'm sorry.
Good evening. For the record, my name is Ryan Urban. I'm here on behalf of the Snohomish County Humane Association of Realtors, representing over 1,000 realtors across the county. We're located at 32 Royal Broadway, Suite E, Everett, Washington, 98201, and I promise to tell the truth.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, first of all, for the opportunity to comment. We're here tonight in support of the proposed comprehensive plan amendment increasing the school mitigation fee discount. As the master builders have pointed out, this proposal will provide direct stimulus to a still very fragile housing recovery. We agree that this proposal will help the city prosper and ultimately help bring in greater sustained tax revenue in the long run. In addition to the tangible financial benefits that you previously heard, research has also shown that homeownership brings substantial social benefits for families, communities, and the country as a whole. Because of these societal benefits, policymakers have promoted homeownership through a number of channels. Homeownership has been an essential element of the American dream for decades and continues to be so even today. Some of these documented social benefits include higher student test scores by children living in owned homes, higher rate of high school graduation. Children are more likely to participate in organized activities and have less television screen time. Greater attachment to the neighborhood and neighborhoods. Increased civic participation in the local community, including voting. As was previously mentioned, quality schools are, in fact, an important factor when a family chooses this, where to purchase a home. But so is affordability. If they can't buy it, they can't move there. So I think what everything we want to do on the economic side to promote that will promote the social well-being as well. This measure will help strike that balance by helping families to realize the dream of homeownership, which will in turn pay dividends back to this community, both socially and financially. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Emmett Lane.
My name is Emmett Lane. I live at 215 105th Street Southeast in Everett, Washington. And I am a recovering builder.
And the testimony you're about to give is the truth?
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
I'm probably the double-edged sword here speaking tonight because my son works for Seattle School District as a teacher. My wife is a liaison from Uncompahgre School District. And I'm a builder. So I can understand the importance of the mitigation fees. But I'm here as a builder, and one of the first things that builders do when we look at an area to build, and I'm a small builder by the way, is what are the fees, what are the times, turnarounds for permits, how easy is the jurisdiction to work with. Currently, we've been building a lot in Montlake Terrace, which recently has made it very easy for builders to build. We've built 10 homes there in the last 6 months. And most of those were spot lots, a couple of them were two lots here, two lots there. But we have been really successful in Montlake, and one of the reasons we were there is because of their willingness to work with us and to lower their fees so we can go in and build. I'm sure some of you are aware that trying to buy money or get money from a lender, if you will, is almost impossible these days. So a lot of times as a builder, we search for private lending, private investors, private funds, which the rates on them sometimes are 10, 15, 20%. But it keeps us building, keeps our guys working. I've had subs come up to me and tell me that if it wasn't for me building in the last 2 or 3 years, if they don't know what they would have done, they have kids in school. You've heard the numbers from some of the people here tonight. Yes, you know, you come in, myself, they buy food from you guys. They'll buy it from the city of Monroe. They'll be buying tools, clothes. When our house is sold, homeowners will be here spending their tax dollars and spending money in the city. So I am for a 50% reduction in the school mitigation fees because it will help other builders and myself come into the city of Monroe. I'm very familiar with Monroe. I'm doing a project off of Promley right now with 30 homes. And again, that's with a private investor. There's no bank lending involved in that. So it's very important when we sit down and do our cost sheets, again, what the fees are, what it will cost. And in today's climate, affordable housing is very important. And in order to get affordable housing, maintain your margins with your private investors and deliver a product, a quality product, cost is everything. And it all starts with the jurisdiction. It starts with the cities. It starts with the mitigation fees. And so I guess I'll hear from my wife and I go home tonight, but I'm very well supporting and hope you will support the 50% reduction in the mitigation fees.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
Have you ever chosen not to build in the community because of their fees?
Yes. A few years ago, Arlington had some really high fees, and we turned the project down because we couldn't afford to build it.
Thank you.
Thank you. I would like to ask a question too. Just on the basis of the fees that we have here in Monroe now and the mitigation fee, how much more does a homeowner pay in their monthly mortgage because of the fees, would you say?
Well, as the fees as a whole?
Right.
Probably $350 to $500 a month, depending on the price of the home.
Okay, thank you very much, Jerry.
Mr. Lane, and for the record, I should probably disclose that I have a client who might be open to buy one of Mr. Lane's homes. We're currently working on that. Hopefully that doesn't create a problem with anyone. I believe those with Mr. Lane.
No, we won't lower your mitigation fees, that's for sure.
Thank you. Did Arlington, was it Arlington school mitigation fees that were?
Well, Arlington currently right now are, I believe they're at zero. But a few years back, Arlington had went from like a $2,500 mitigation fee up to a $7,500 school mitigation fee. And it pretty much blew most builders out of water that were planning on going into the city of Arlington and doing some building.
So in the case of Monroe, would a $950 to $1,000 difference in the school mitigation fees keep you from coming to town and doing a project?
Okay, well, it may. It depends on our cost sheets while we're building. Also, if you're looking at one single home, then probably not. But I know, for instance, there's several plats in the area. I think Roosevelt Hills up for annexation, those type of things. If you're talking 50 homes, then that would be $50,000. So that might make a difference.
Do you absorb those costs, or do you pass them on to the buyer?
We pass them on to the buyer. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Any other questions, Commissioner?
Sir, any chance I could have a one-minute rebuttal?
Let's get through a list, and we'll have a chance for a rebuttal. Right. Okay, I have one last name here, Stephen Jensen.
My name is Stephen Jensen. I live at 17041 155th Street Southeast, right here in Monroe. I'm a Monroe resident.
And the testimony you're about to give is the truth?
Yes.
Thank you.
Before I get to what I was planning to say, I wanted to mention a couple things from what I've heard this evening. In regard to if we collect $1 million in mitigation fees, the current plan, if that was cut by a third, that would cost two portables. If you want to put it in realistic terms, it would cost us two portables from the numbers he gave. I heard a comment about talking about the benefits of home ownership and all those good things. Well, those benefits apply anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world, not just here. So if somebody can't build their home here, they'll build it somewhere else. They'll still get those benefits of home ownership. One thing, it sounds like the developers have to pay these fees up front. If I'm understanding the situation correctly, perhaps some of those problems can be solved if we could just change it to where they pay the fees when the house sells the first time so that they don't have to float $50,000 to build a plat of homes. Now, what I wanted to talk about is, this is an interesting thing sitting there with those big wad of paper bundles. It says impact fees in plain English. I don't know where it came from, who provided it, but one thing I want to read from here is, what is an impact fee? Because we seem to be forgetting that. Impact fees are a mechanism for assuring that developers pay a share of the costs of off-site facilities that serve the development. For example, a new development may create the need for new, expanded, or improved public facilities, such as parks, newer widened roads and sidewalks, schools, fire protection, et cetera, et cetera. I've heard in other discussions suggestions were made that if you lower the mitigation fee, then more housing will be built quicker, collecting more money. But that's the wrong approach. an example I'm going to give is, suppose from today on there was zero new development, zero new homes at all. Well, that means the school, the amount of kids in school would stay about stable approximately, and there wouldn't be need for mitigation. We need to spend more money on portables because there's no growth. On the flip side, let's suppose every single plot of land that could house a new home or a new apartment in Monroe appeared, built up overnight. Now the schools are going to need every dollar of mitigation they can get all at once. And of course, because they all did, they would all pay that mitigation fee and they would have what money they are due. So if you took that example and you cut that money by a third, they're short money. So to simply say, well, we're going to lower the mitigation fee and it's going to build housing faster, it's not a source of revenue, it's a mitigation fee. Building that housing faster doesn't, and collecting money faster doesn't solve the problem, doesn't get them more money faster, because it also brought in more kids faster. So they need even more mitigation. So justifying a cut, thinking, well, you're going to build more housing faster, isn't the answer. It's the wrong thought process about this. They need the mitigation. I'm opposed to cutting the discount rate. I would, in fact, recommend, as was said earlier, that Monroe drop it entirely, that we charge the full 100% of that mitigation fee, and it sounds like the schools could use every dollar that they could get. Anything else? Go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that's all the names I had on the list. Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to speak? Yes, please. Come on, please. Give your name and address, please.
It's Deborah Collard, 12507, 263rd Avenue Southeast in Monroe. I spoke to
And the testimony you're about to give is the truth.
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
I spoke to you guys at the last meeting with my concerns with the heavy breakdown in half since 2002, while our taxes increased by 87%. But I was a former school director from 2007 until 2011. And during that term, we had to close down one of the schools here, our middle school. And we consolidated down from three schools down to two. By doing that, it saved us considerable additional general revenue for us to spend on towards education. But what we needed to do then was add portables. So we had to add four portables at Hidden River. And that was a cost of over $800,000. And that money came directly from mitigation funds. And so without having that money, we would not have been able to make that plan, and which that plan also included taking our kids out of the industrial park, which was a $55,000 a month rental fee, and putting them into Monroe Middle School. So it was able to save us a lot of money. So the other scenario is if we didn't have that money, we would have to go to the voters. And one thing that hasn't been discussed is the cost of an election. An election can cost us about 30, I think one of them was as high as $36,000. That money, again, would have to come out of the general fund, which is, again, taking money away from the education of the children. So I'm here to ask you guys once again to oppose a reduction of mitigation fees, and I support no discount fees at all. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, is there anybody else that would like to speak? Okay, I'd like to offer a bit of time here just for rebuttals to people who have spoken. So if you would like to come back up and do a rebuttal, please do so.
I'll still tell the truth.
Okay, thank you.
I firmly believe in all the good things that the building community...
Could you give me your name?
Jim Stott.
Thank you.
All the good things the building community said about homeownership. They're right. It's absolutely great. It benefits everybody. But when it comes to mitigation fees, our builder friend was talking about total fees. He wasn't talking about school fees. The school fees are a very small portion of the fees charged by the city of Monroe for a new housing unit. Yet they're the only fee that doesn't have an ongoing continuing revenue source from that new home. All the other fees, the parks, the roads, the sewer, the water, they continue to benefit from that new homeowner because UCAM rate-based taxing authority, while the school district only has a specific dollar amount taxing authority that has to be approved by the voters. So if you're going to cut anything, it's suicidal to cut the schools because the schools impact the desirability of the community more than anything. Cut something that is going to have at least that continuing revenue source that comes with the new development. So you can make up improving the parks because you'll be getting new money every year from that home for improving the parks. We don't have that benefit as a school district. All we get to provide new housing for the new kids is the mitigation fee. It's that and nothing else. You know, later on when we pass a bond issue, yes, they will get to vote on that bond issue, and if it passes, they will contribute. But until that time, all they're doing is lowering everybody else's tax bill. They're not helping the schools at all. So I urge you to protect the schools of this community because they are the heart of this community. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks,
Kamal. Thank you. Nancy True Pierce, I'll still tell the truth.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. I echo that there are other fees that you can look at. One of the ones that I want you to take a pretty good look at is your parks mitigation fees. One of the things that I've heard from Monroe City staff is that we're pretty good shape for parks. We're ahead of the curve on parks. I don't know how true that is. But that's another area. That's why the bottom line of my testimony is make school mitigation fees your last possible resort. I also understand from city staff that you're looking at 4,000 houses by 2035. If the student generation rates hold steady, that's 2,460 more kids. And so we'll definitely need as much money as we can get for that. And then the last point I'd like to make is that I've only been on the school board about a year. I'm very impressed with the trend lines I see for the school district. This school district is already doing a good job for our schools, for our kids, and it's getting better all the time. We see graduation rates that are in the 90% for extended graduation rate. We got an OSPI award last year for our high school for how good they're doing. And we've got our fifth grade test scores this year were significant jumps on all three key indicators of math, English, and science. And that's significant because our superintendent's been here 6 years. So the fifth grade is a battle of students doing better. We've got AP classes that have jumped from 30 kids in 2006 to over 300 kids this year in participating in that. So we're doing really well. We will get more money from OSPI, but don't forget that the McCleary decision in the state discovered that we're underfunding education in the first place, so we're going to lose money on every kid. So we're not going to make that in volume. We want to have money that we can sweep from operations in the capital to improve capital facilities in the school district. So we've got this thing on the run. We've already got some world-class schools out there that are getting great rewards, and we need to keep funding them in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else have a rebuttal? You want to rebut
yourself? Yeah. Something else. I thought I wanted to rebut earlier. Stephen Jensen again, same address. You had asked about what effect fees and stuff would have on a mortgage monthly payment, and I think that answer you got was based on a much bigger number than just the schools. $1,000 financed over 30 years at even higher, or you know, at 4.5%, which is higher than today's rates, $1,000 over 30 years, about $5 a month. One more thought.
Okay, let's keep it moving, Jim.
Okay. The figures that Steve Jensen shared earlier about, you know, whether there's no growth or whether there's a tremendous amount of growth, that's all already in the capital facilities plan. Those numbers are factored in there. That's why rates go up and down. The reason that Arlington's rates were so high several years ago is because they had a massive amount of growth that they couldn't keep up with, and the capital facilities formulas produced that kind of a rate as what it would take to help them catch back up. So, you know, they're not set arbitrarily. They're set based on need. And I want to be sure that you people are aware of that, because it's a vital part of the discussion.
Thank you, Jim. Any more from the audience? Any more rebuttals or comments? Anything from the commission? Any questions? Well, then I'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing portion of this meeting.
So moved.
Or not the public hearing.
Of the person.
Yeah, the public. Input comments. So moved by Wayne Rodman, Commissioner Rodman.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Schroeder. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, carried. All right. Let's see. Now we have open to discussion by the commissioners, if there's any questions or any comments by commissioners based on what we heard from the public hearing.
No question for staff.
Okay,
is it 6 years or 10 years?
It is 10 years.
So we need to correct.
That's appropriate.
Thank you.
Right, to be specific, that's in the zoning code amendment. It's 28.07.110.B. It talks about expending or encumbering funds within 6 years, and it shouldn't be 10. If I could clarify one point on the I'm not sure about the number of houses in the next 20 years, but at this point, we do have 4 subdivisions under construction or in the early stages of processing. 2 were distressed, a couple were distressed properties that have been brought back. The larger ones are ones that had not been issued permits, and we actually just in the last week submitted for initial review on the subdivision. That's the majority of the houses that we're talking about. It was 250 or 260. We've been working with those folks for the last few months, so they were, in a way, in the pipeline, just not to a formal submittal. But we do have that online now, and I think we're looking at somewhere 3 to 5 years to see all those 250-some houses actually be built. Depending on the market.
Thank you, Paul. As going through all those documentation, and by the way, I had to go buy more paper for my printer and more ink for my printer. My main question that came out of this coming in here tonight was on the mitigation fees themselves, the actual percentage rate. Is it my understanding that tonight at this meeting or this public hearing, we're not deciding what that discount is. We're just taking it out of the comprehensive plan and moving it to the zoning code, but the municipal code. Is that assumption correct?
You're right in that we are acting on the comprehensive plan. And we are also acting on the impact fee as a part of the zoning code amendment. If you go to, was it? I had it here. 2007-075 in that revised code. Talks about city adoption of school impact fees.
Okay.
This follows that methodology. And there's a paragraph there that does specify
the last sentence in that paragraph.
One half of the amount calculated within the capital facilities plan for schools. So this code does...
What number was it?
Pardon me? 2007-075.
075.
Following all those tables that are the methodology, the last sentence of that paragraph calls for, basically calls for the 50% discount, one half of the amount that's calculated by the district according to that formula.
Okay.
So this does, in the code, not in the contract, but in this zoning code, does specify, or subdivision code, does specify the 50%. So that's important to point that out.
I was looking for 50%, I missed the one half.
Right.
So, thank you.
But to your point, there are two actions in front of you today. The first one is to decouple the code language from the comprehensive plan. The second is to modify the zoning code to accept the regulatory language into it.
Okay.
So two separate votes, two separate actions, amendments are to either or document are acceptable.
Thank you. Thank you, Anna. I thought that was correct then. I was half correct. Thank you. Anybody else?
I have comments. I think they're more appropriate if we close the public hearing or discussion.
Okay. Then I'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing. That's the move.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Dirksen and seconded by Commissioner Demers. And all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, we're closing the public hearing. Okay, now we move to a motion for action on the conclusion of the public hearing. We need to, you know, vote on action. We'll take them, what, one at a time?
Yes. And there's a time for discussion before we go to that.
Okay, let's go to discussion.
Thank you.
Okay, Chairman.
I've been
promoted. You used to be Chairman. Thank you.
I'm not sure whether to fall over. Jeff, you want to respond to this? It doesn't matter to me, but the comment was made at one point in this evening's testimony about how by addressing the question of discount in the comprehensive plan with regard to school mitigation fees, it creates a certain greater degree perhaps of certainty and perhaps less flexibility or opportunity for change. Now, I know there's been a lot of discussion about comprehensive plan elements and whether they're broad, narrow, the regulatory components don't belong per se. But all that said, I think the comprehensive plan language can be either broad or can be narrow. And clearly the more narrow it is, the narrower it is, the less room there is for change at this position here on whatever timing some council may decide. Isn't that a good thing, especially when we're talking about someone else's fees, namely the school district's fees? I mean, if it were the park's fees, or transportation, or if it were any of the fees that we have, I think there's a difference because they're our fees, per se, they're the city's fees. We're not talking about the city's fees here, we're talking about the school district's fees. I've sat up here a long time, I think everyone knows that. Every time the school capital facilities fees have come before us, or the capital facilities element has come before us, we defer to the school district. And it's really been a matter of housekeeping on our part, and I think to a certain extent perhaps on the council's part, in recognizing it was their fees, their decision, and we're going to support it. Doesn't feel like we're doing that anymore. I'm concerned about moving it out of the comprehensive plan and making it more vulnerable to the political change. And I'd appreciate staff's comments on that. Thoughts?
I can offer one quick response. I think what, in my mind, what's appropriate in the comprehensive plan is to talk about the mitigation fees and perhaps talk about a discount as a part of that process of determining and assessing that fee. But I don't believe that the comp plan's role is to say 25% or 50%. That it sets the, if it is a long-term credit, it sets the basis for that practice. But if it's 25 or 35 or 50, I think that's a more appropriately a function of the regulatory code, not the comprehensive policy plan.
Just to elaborate a little further, too, is if when the state law was written, the legislature wanted to give that power to the school districts, they would have. They didn't. Impact fees are part of the regulatory code when it comes to your development regulations, pure and simple. It's a legislative authority granted to the council. Council can give that away. They can embed it in your comp plan, make it more restrictive. They can take it out, make it more lenient. The comp plan can be a tool to slow or to accelerate growth. I think you're right there. We've got other complicating factors involved here, too. We used to call school district levies maintenance and operation levies. Maintenance and operation. Now we call them learning levies. And that can be explained by a lot of different ways, but the state, I think that's what we've seen all the Supreme Court decision base its decision on, is that we haven't been funding schools at the state level for operations or for capital improvements at the level that they should be. And this conversation is tensioned on that very fact that the school district, for whatever reason, has been incapable of passing a bond levy to share that load on all of the taxpayers. And they're relying on impact fees to pay for growth as it comes along. Over the last 4 years, 5 years, we've seen no growth in the school district. And that can be seen in the fact that the school district has a balance of $400,000+ in their impact fee fund because they can't use it to replace a heat pump on a school building or to build, remodel a classroom in a school building. It can only be used as a partial payment for new growth. So when new growth comes to town, the city council, in my belief, sits and looks at the entire community. They're the ones that have to adopt a comprehensive plan based on new growth. They have to look at things like parks. They have to look at things like transportation. They have to be informed and look at things like schools. They also look at sewer and water fees. Now, city staff hasn't been just idling along on the rest of the fees. We're looking at park fees, and it looks as though we will be able to reduce park fees. And that will be coming along through the legislative pike. But that's not constrained by a comprehensive plan. We can do that legislatively. Our transportation improvement plan, we're going to spend $250,000 on a new study next year to determine whether those fees are correct. We're looking at sewer hookup fees and water hookup fees. One of the things that we currently do is we charge a developer based on the size of the meter rather than the size of the need. If you have a 2-inch meter on a house that only needs a 1/2 inch of water, we're charging them 75% too much. So we're looking at consumption rather than delivery. It's just a difference in how you look at that, and we will be able to reduce fees to the developer. But in the end, a comprehensive plan is just that. You're supposed to look at all of the issues, school mitigation fees being one of them. The school district is very focused and very purposeful about educating kids and the capital improvements that go into that. The city council has to look at the city as a whole. And right now, Monroe is faced with a 10% unemployment rate plus. We need new homes. There are lots coming through the pipeline, and when we talk about lots, that's raw land to preliminary plat, to final plat, to selling individual lots through the subdivision process, to building a home, to selling a home. And that's a lengthy process, as I'm sure you're all aware. So part of that is to attract the builders as the building cycle starts to grow again. And in Snohomish County, we're looking at a lot shortage rate. So developers are out right now picking up preliminary plats that are about to expire or have been sitting around for a fair amount of time, bringing light back into them and pushing towards final. And we're going to see more of that as growth continues. We are planning for a substantial amount of growth over the next 20 years. Part of that is how do we accommodate that? If through the comprehensive planning process, our growth allocation is an additional 6,000 people, how do we accommodate that if no builders want to come to Monroe to build? And it's a true fact, and you can talk to builders, they're very sensitive to the fees going into that. The price point of a home is just that, the price point of a home. There's no raising the price to go along with the impact fee, where the house sits on the lot. It's a very sensitive issue. The financing involved in it. One of the things we could do is change fees to be paid at time of permit or time of occupancy, like the county has done, rather than the issuance of the permit. Something we can look at, and I think we probably will be looking at that. But again, the city council's role in the planning commission as the advisory group is to look comprehensively at the entire package, not to get bogged down on a single issue. And I'm not saying it disrespectfully towards the school district, but we're getting bogged down on school district needs rather than what's good for the community as a whole. And new residential development in this city is needed. So that's just my, probably more than you wanted to hear, but that's my theory, and I believe that leaving the legislative authority in the municipal code allows for maximum participation as the winds of change politically change. Tying it up inside the comprehensive plan puts undue stress on a community when the political winds have changed and the desire of the council is to amend something, and we force it through an 18-month comprehensive planning process and another 6-month zoning change process, 2 years to make a legislative change that should have only took maybe 6 months. It creates a tremendous amount of tension on the community to make these changes. This is the fifth one that I've been through in the last year as we try to change comprehensive planning and extract code from the comprehensive plan and put it out into the municipal code where it can be debated on a code basis.
Mr. Chair, may I respond?
Yes.
Just a follow-up. Thank you, Jeff. The school district fees have not been a two-year process, and based on the calendar I've seen, they're not going to be a two-year process. Isn't that correct?
In this case, they're not. And it's due to a peculiarity and an exception under GMA that allows for, if it has to do with capital facilities planning, we can do it outside the budget cycle.
Thank you. The school district, every 2 years, brings us an update to their five-year plan. I can appreciate what you're saying about the council having the legislative authority to respond to conditions as they may be with regard to various fees with the city levies. And you offered the transportation, the parks, the utility connection charges, et cetera, as examples. Those are all things that they come home to roost here, so to speak, because they are dollars and funds that the city council directly controls. What happens to the school's planning from a capital facilities perspective if halfway through their two-year cycle, all of a sudden the city council politically decides, you know, we need to get rid of the mitigation fees. Boom, they're gone. What's it take, a month to do an amendment to the fee schedule? A couple of months, perhaps?
Perhaps.
The city can look at such an action on their own funds and determine and evaluate the consequences. I suspect for the school district, it would be like getting slapped across the side of the head.
And I worry about turning that sort of capital facility fee into a political item. And thus, I see the benefit of staying in the comprehensive plan to provide for the school district some predictability that without it is gone. And one more moment, I'm there. The developer I spoke with would be really pleased to hear the comments you just offered tonight about looking at all the fees. He would totally agree with that and support it. He said, and I don't want to quote him exactly because it wouldn't be good on the record, but it had something in front of backwards with regard to approaching the school mitigation fees first. He said of all the mitigation fees the city charges, that is, and we heard that this evening in testimony, it is the most emotional fee the city has. People think about schools. They don't think about the size of the connection to the water meter. They don't think about long-term the capacity of the sewage treatment plant. But they do think about the schools and how they're being funded. And it just, I'm really wrestling with this. So I will yield to someone else. Thank you for the time.
And I'll just add to it, it is a very emotional issue. And I've said many, many times with regard to the Growth Management Act, if when GMA came into play, there was zero deficiency in the system, our schools were fully built out, our roads were fully built out, our parks were fully built out, I'd be in favor of full board impact fees. But they're not. We went into this in 2002 with a substantial deficiency in the school program, capital facility program. We still have a substantial deficiency. We've got 600, 800 kids in portals. We've heard that tonight. Impact fees are not going to do a thing to get those kids out of those portals. The only thing that's going to get those kids out of those portals is a bond. And that's why the city of Snohomish has low impact fees. Their taxpayers were convinced by not only the school district, but also other legislative leaders. I happen to be one of those folks that helped the Snohomish School Board get their bonds passed. That's how you go about creating a healthy environment for your school district. And this town has not been able to figure that out up to this point. A third reduction in school impact fees isn't going to fix that problem for us going forward. And again, it's an emotional issue, but the facts that are on the table today are we have a huge deficiency in our capital program in the school district, and the impact fees cannot, by law, address that issue.
I have a comment that seems to me, I'm a lay person, I'm a retired lay person. But as I look through things here, and I see, what was the date that this 25% was voted on? Do you remember?
2002.
What year?
2002.
Okay. And I heard a comment, somebody said tonight that we have these classrooms, these portable classrooms we've had for 45 years, something like that.
A few.
But we've also have a whole bunch of other portable classrooms, correct? That we're doing, and we have to purchase these things. And it seems to me, as we've been collecting these mitigation fees from 2002 to the present, that the rate that it's at now has not pushed us anywhere. Has not made an impact on getting schools built or classrooms built. All it does is allow us to maybe purchase another one or two of these buildings, right, these portable buildings.
We've actually purchased about 10 of them in the last 6 years.
Okay. But it seems to me like, it's like kicking the can down the road type of thing it does not seem to me that, and I think Jeff said earlier that the impact fees are not making an impact on getting schools built. The only thing that's going to make an impact is if we get the community together to vote on a getting the schools built by with a bond issue or something like that. To me, the impact fees are not making a big difference. We're not building homes. And if we, and another thing I was thinking about is if we built two homes rather than one, that makes up for that discount. Am I correct in saying that? If we have a 25% discount and we sell one home, but if we have a 50% discount, we sell two homes, doesn't that make up for that?
We now have 1.2 students instead of 0.6 students.
Or you may have more students.
Well, on average, which is all we can work from in planning, we now have 1.2 students instead of 0.6 students. No, we haven't solved that problem.
Yeah. Well, my point is that the more homes you sell, it seems to me the more homes you sell, the more impact fees you collect.
And the more students
you can have a lower rate.
And the more students that you generate.
Right, we can't get out from this.
Excuse me, if we're going to have anyone speaking, we really should have them on the microphone, yeah, just for the benefit of.
And I appreciate it if I could get my point across. I'm all messed up now, so.
Mr.
Chair?
Paul? And one quick comment in terms of, I guess it relates to comp plan versus the zoning code. The code that we have now, I'm sorry, the code as we propose to change does include, I meant 2007-060 paragraph C, where the school district can prepares their plans on a two-year cycle. This code allows them, I think as it has done in the past, to amend it every year. And it also goes on to say that the city may not consider this kind of amendment more than once a year, except as allowed by state law, which means that the only other time the city could process that kind of amendment is in concert with the budget, which is what we're doing this year. So I think that does put a limit on how often that could potentially be changed. The city can certainly initiate a change, but this may limit the city to once, perhaps twice a year, if I'm not mistaken.
So all you're suggesting that the city would not be willing to change their schedule of fees, which is where this would show up, any more than once a year?
The city would not be able to change its schedule of fees without changing this code amendment.
If I could, Dave, I think we've got into the trap of words. We call the calculated rate that the school board or school district calculates through their formula, X number of dollars is the total impact of one student to the district. We're calling that an impact fee. We're also calling, and I think that's addressed in the paragraph Paul was discussing. In other words, we can only accept a change from the school district once a year. However, I think you're correct in that if you go to the adoption of school impact fees in 2007-075, that fee could be changed periodically.
Every quarter, perhaps.
It could be changed every quarter. Now, would it be wise that I'll leave that for others to discuss that issue?
Sure. Thank you.
Jeff, can you help me with the point? Zoning is an exercise of police power. Is a comprehensive plan an exercise of police power?
I think the answer to that is yes, because you can't get to zoning without the comprehensive plan.
Thank you.
But technically, I believe the basis for zoning all the way back to federal enabling legislation years ago is based on zoning as a enabled by police power to enforce regulations. And certainly, as Jeff says, the comp plan sets the precedent for that. the basis for that.
In light of that, what is the standard throughout the state, if you know, on how these fees are typically handled? Is it within a comp plan or within more comps?
I can only speak to the county in my experience. Countywide, the fees are established by ordinance and through a fee resolution. State law requires the fee to be established by ordinance. And that's why we've embodied it in ordinance. But they are not typically buried, or the comprehensive language is not typically placed in the comprehensive plan. Case in point, and I just bring this up because it's a mistake we all just gone through. Last year we didn't update the most recent comprehensive plan, capital facilities plan from the school district came through, but we didn't amend our fee resolution. And a lot of excuses could be brought to bear as to why we did that, but perhaps it was we just got so comfortable with the fees being established by the school district that we forgot to address the comprehensive plan change and adjust the fees. Now, if it's in the zoning code and we have to adopt that through a zoning code amendment, it becomes more urgent, and we will pay attention to that on an annual basis, because the fee won't be established by a comprehensive plan or just a simple acceptance of the capital facilities plan from the school district. We'd have to take that second positive step to affirm what that fee would be.
Commissioner Demers?
And I appreciate it, Commissioner. That it was obviously an unfortunate situation. Wouldn't that be remedied by just leaving the fees out of the company's plan, but leaving the discount percentage in?
That would calculate the fee, wouldn't it?
Based on whatever we've been told currently by the school district.
And again, it was never anticipated that the school district would establish and set what the fee is. And by we have de facto allowed the school district to establish what the fee is, and the discount calculated inside their capital facilities plan and adopted by reference. Again, it's a policy call. I'm of the belief that it should be outside of the comprehensive plan, and council should be able to address it as they desire, based on input from the public.
Years ago, the city council used to meet with the school board, and we used to hash this over there, and it looks like this might be a good thing to start over again. We are not the school board here, and it's going to be up to the city council to make a decision on this anyway. And I'd like to see them give us a recommendation and have them meet together. I think would be a wise idea.
Recommendation from council, you're saying?
Yeah, let them pass this on to the council, let them make the recommendation. They're looking to have a meeting with the school board. We used to do that.
But isn't that what they're looking for from us?
Well, they're kind of looking for from us, but isn't what we're...
Commissioner Roblin, that is set for November 6th. There's been an invitation to the school district to meet jointly with the council.
It doesn't look to me like this mitigation fees is a permanent fix for this problem. And it looks to me like we're going to have to do something different today. Bond issues for school building like they did in Snohomish. My kids all graduated from Snohomish. My grandkids graduated. I don't know. And the grandkids are in school now, and the great grandkids are also. So I am in favor of schools very much, but I'm not sure mitigation fees are the final answer.
Can I offer an important clarification to what I see going on amongst your discussion? I'd still tell the truth and I'd even come up to the podium.
I have to say that the public portion of the hearing is closed.
Even as the school board director?
Commissioners, what?
I guess my question would be is this, if he's acting in the capacity of representative of the school, we can certainly, I think, choose to ask for their input because they're a part of the action. Jeff, would that be fair?
The public hearing is closed. If you'd like to take additional testimony, you need to take a vote to open the public hearing again and offer additional input from the board. And I don't know if you have to advertise that and open it to everybody again. So I don't know the answer to that question.
But I believe the chair may have the discretion to take input from the audience. It's not part of the formal record. So it's not formal testimony, it's just information taken. But I think that would be a lot in this case at your discretion.
Yeah, I'll be open to hear just some comments based on what you just heard. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. We don't look at mitigation fees to solve our existing problems. That was never the intent. That is not the process that mitigation was created for. What we're going to look for is to solve future problems, to be able to house the new students coming to us, not solve past problems. We understand that has to be done through a bond issue, but that's not what mitigation was ever intended for. Mitigation is forward-looking. We collect the fees at permit time so that by the time the kids show up and want to be in a classroom, we can get a classroom online for those kids. That's a huge difference, and the conversation that I heard going seemed to have missed that point. That's the only reason I wanted to make.
Thank you for your clarification.
Thank you.
I think we're pretty overwhelmed here, and I think it might be wise to continue the recommendation to the next meeting, which I understand is a week from today rather than 2 weeks. Is that correct?
That's right.
So that we can absorb some of this. I don't know if it's the appropriate time in the process to make that motion, but rather than do it tonight, I think it would be wise to slow the settlement of the week. And that still would be timely, Jeff, to the council by November 6th. Is that correct?
Yes. That schedule-wise, that still works in tune with the November 6th council discussion.
It's okay if we did something like that, push it to the next meeting.
My staff report had a recommended action, but an to take action on this. But the alternative was to postpone it to the October 22nd meeting, knowing that this was maybe premature to make try to make a decision tonight.
I was looking for the staff report in this file. Okay, the alternative. Okay. Commissioner Devlin.
I think there's a merit to what Commissioner Sherwood has just offered. The recommended action that's in the staff report for item number one is really quite a few things wrapped up into one as I read it. To adopt gap facilities plan from the school districts and to adopt the amended text within the cap facility development comprehensive plan. Would there be that value of perhaps polling the commission at this point with the idea that this is going to roll over next week as to what the commission feels about the possibility of staying with the current approach of the discount rate being included in the comprehensive plan versus the proposed changes that are on the table in front of us this evening. Just to get some idea of where maybe we want to go next week, what our choices might be, and whether there's interest enough in having staff come back with a comprehensive plan element that would reflect that sort of action. Would that make sense?
No.
Mr. Chair, there are a couple of points that have come up tonight. One, thinking back, was the reference to 10 years as opposed to 6 years. And based on the consensus of the commission, we can incorporate that change. We may also consider as a possible revision what Commissioner Demers just mentioned about including a specific discount number in the comprehensive plan text, and there may be other specific issues you want us to look at between now and next week.
Yeah, I'm open to that, and I think that is something that I have to spend some time trying to get straight in my mind too, is which place is the right place or the better place or whatever for that. So I'm open to looking at our decision off to the next meeting. Anybody else? Commissioner Denver?
But just before we're done, I would like to ask a couple of questions about the proposed ordinance, if I may. If this might be a good time for that.
Okay.
If this is the direction we end up going, I'm curious as to staff's thought on why we're going to the step of line by line setting forth the calculation for the school mitigation fees in our ordinance when apparently it's been defined by Snohomish County, accepted by us in the past, and adopted by the school district. Why are we just, it seems redundant to me and superfluous.
I think the drafter of this document, Brad, what he did was extracted the county's procedures and embodied them into the city's procedures. So that's really where a lot of the calculation and the factor, the formula came straight out of county code.
And I understand
so. And part of that has to do with, again, the county determines how that formula is placed in the comprehensive plan. Up to this point, the city's code has been silent on the formula, and I believe the reason for the inclusion of the formula is to reinforce to the school district that that's the formula they need to use when calculating the fee or the impact inside the city limits as well as outside the city limits. Now, logically, you have two separate police powers, one's the county, one's the city. It makes sense to incorporate it into both.
All right, I don't have any other questions at this point. I would like to see some staff thoughts come back to us for next week as to keeping it in the comprehensive plan versus taking it out. I think that is the policy decision that you say that you need to mull over,
right.
And I think that we need to be acting on and deciding on the waiver recommendation. I think it might be helpful for all of us if we were to see the two side by side in front of us. That's my thought anyway. Interesting years.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I need to study a little bit more about what's going on. Right now my brain is just, I can't wrap it around anymore. And I'm pulled in two different directions at this point.
Okay, I guess I'll entertain a motion then.
And that would be to continue deliberations till the 22nd on this item. I'll make that motion.
Okay.
Second.
So Chairman Everest, the motion to continue deliberation on to the 22nd of October, seconded by Commissioner Rodlin. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, great. So this discussion will continue on our October 22nd meeting. Hopefully we'll come up with a recommendation for the city council. Okay. I'd like to thank everybody who came tonight and presented their comments, and please do I say one in the early meeting.
There will be more comments next week.
Yeah, it's not a public hearing, but you can.
No, you close public testimony in this town. If you allow comments.
No, I mean, as far as comments, but if they'd like to come next week to the meeting, that's.
But we can't say anything.
Yeah, public hearing is closed. Thank you. And it looks like we're going to be past 9 o'clock, so I'd like to entertain the motion to carry the meeting past 9 o'clock.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Commissioner Demarest to meeting past 9 o'clock, second by Commissioner. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carry. Okay, thank you. All right, the next item on the docket tonight is the, let's take a 5 minute. Public hearing for ZCA 2012-07 North Kelsey Design Guidelines. Paul, do you want to lead us off here?
Yes, I will. On the blank here, that we made some changes to the comprehensive plan this last cycle, which included some language to do with North Kelsey. And this was the next logical step in changing, updating these guidelines. These were originally approved as a part of the North Kelsey development plan that for that whole area back in 2003. And it was all based on that original concept for that development that had a pedestrian-focused, pedestrian-scale complex of buildings. It was like an outdoor mall or a center flipped inside out. But the issue is that, and what drove the con plan change was that development never came about the way it was originally designed and intended. It didn't have a combination of the market and the projects that were approved piecemeal. It's at a point now where it will never be implemented according to that original vision. So we've gone back to these design guidelines and made some fairly extensive revisions and removals, mostly in terms of the site configuration and all of the guidelines that apply to this pedestrian corridor, this village green, these pedestrian focus areas and so forth that were an integral part of the plan, which is no longer physically possible. So we've taken quite a bit out of the first two-thirds or three-fourths of the guidelines related to that scale of design guidelines, but we have kept pretty much intact the architectural building design guidelines and the landscape guidelines. The sign chapter we intend to pull out and incorporate into our sign code update, and we'll be talking about that at the next meeting, so that the signage for North Kelsey is incorporated into the citywide code. We'll retain the downtown as a kind of a separate sign code subject. North Kelsey signage is really not that much different from what we have in our code now, so especially with the update. So that's, in a nutshell, a lot of changes to the mapping and the guidelines that are no longer relevant. That's really the point of this. What's relevant now that could have been relevant back if the development had come about was intended, and then keeping those more specific guidelines in place. And but had some conversations over time with people about these guidelines, and just recently the architect for NextCore, the new office building, I asked him very specifically, did you have a problem with the architectural guidelines in this document in putting together your design for this building? And they didn't have any problem with any of it. It's, you know, it's subject to interpretation of how well the requirements are met, but they didn't have anything specific that said, no, I think this should be thrown out, or this is a bad idea. So I think there is some pretty good basis for those guidelines that we are pretty much keeping intact. So with that, I'd be happy to take some questions and take your feedback on this.
Commissioner Sherwood.
On page 24, Paul, under intent, chapter 1 introduction, there's two bullet points under B, enhances downtown circulation for pedestrians and vehicles, connects and integrates other downtown activities. When we originally looked at this, decoupling this from a downtown plan, is this language appropriate to still be in here? I just want to understand why it's in there.
Actually, we thought about that and whether it is still appropriate or necessary, and erring on the side of preferring to keep it as a reminder, we left it in. I think there may still be some potential for improving the pedestrian network, but in terms of explicit connections that were envisioned in the old Kelsey plan, that's not going to happen. But in terms of that pedestrian system within North Kelsey should lend itself and support the ability to not drive back downtown or vice versa. So that's what we left it in.
Piggybacking on what Commissioner Sherwood said, personally, I think that's a little bit confusing by having it there. At least the one that says enhances downtown circulation for pedestrians and vehicles. That line there is confusing to me because it is the North Kelsey area. It's separated from the downtown area, and I don't see how that is even applicable.
It's a stretch, frankly, but let's say we heard on the side of keeping it rather than discarding it, but you know, the commission's pleasure will take your direction on this.
Okay. Anybody else? Comment? Here, comment?
Well, if you know, on that line item too that they were talking about, if I think about it in my mind, it does not connect at all. The second one where it connects and integrates other downtown, I would keep that one in. But enhancing downtown circulation, there is nothing that connects the two at all, you know, at this point. And I don't see in the future where it can really even do that. So that might be putting some undue restraints on some things, if, you know, in the future, and you'd have to go back in and revamp that again. And are we trying to, as much as possible, make this as simple and as direct as possible?
We are, in the context of what has been built and what will finish it out.
Right.
How that will come to be, yes.
Anybody else have a comment?
On that or other
things? Well, I think on that, I would prefer to see that particular line not included in this document, because it is, to me, it is confusing. And one of the things we did originally was we wanted to make sure we separated North Kelsey from downtown. In two different directions, going in two different directions. And now it seems like now we're kind of leaving some strings, you know, attached back at the North Kelsey thing. That's my personal opinion. I'd like to see it go.
I think I'm going to disagree a little bit. It's what we wanted back then, and I don't know that it matters now, because I think that's a lost cause anyway. There was a desire when this was adopted to try to create some sort of connection between the two.
Right.
I think the map on page 26 of the red line, or the unred line, it would be on 25 of the red line copy. I'm sorry, 20. It's the one that showed where the traffic directions, the gateways. There was an indication that there was an effort to try to connect. I think that effort or potential now is gone. But I'm sure that we'll hear from the public on that as well during our public testimony portion. There might be some different opinions. Certainly, I don't think we want to be making decisions on taking these out versus keeping them in right now.
Right.
Raising them as questions certainly is worthwhile.
Yeah.
But I don't think this is the time to make a decision.
Okay. Any other commissioner comments?
Just a couple of questions.
Yeah. Made.
I know this language that was in the plan originally, and it's still staying there. Is there any need to define the gateway, or what is thought of as a gateway? I don't really see anything defined in here, and it wasn't before it ran. So that might be something we'll look at as well. And we've got a section on definitions. The map may somewhat define it by default, but maybe you should have a little bit more. The other question I had to do with the signage, not the signage, I'm sorry, the opportunities to pay for the transportation section. Street corners, highly visible locations. And in the red line, comments page 47 for a map, page 46 for the areas. Area C talks about, and again, this was in here from the beginning, and I think it looked out there, but talk about chain link road, that mid-block entry between one plus street and turning place. Well, are we talking about the stairs that go down that steep hillside? Because otherwise, there is no mid-block entry. And perhaps we want to take that out of there. Paul, do you have any idea what?
Can you give me the paragraph?
Sure. On page 46, it's the last one, C.
Okay.
At the bottom.
Got it.
And on 47 on the map, it shows C as being on the east side of the development area, right along in the middle between the intersection of Chain Lake and North Kelsey and Turning Place to the south. And there may have been an entryway proposed there at one point, but at this time, I think it's about a 20-foot step, and that's vertical.
Looks like there was intended to be a connection to the that building complex in the southern part of the area, back door kind of access through there, which really is no longer relevant.
So we might want to look at cleaning that up as well. Another question on that?
Sure.
On architectural concept, and I'm looking at page 53 of the red line, the very first intent statement, I just don't see how Walmart, Lowe's, and now 50,000 square foot medical clinic are going to reflect Monroe's small town character. If it doesn't make sense, let's not put it in there.
I'm not sure how that reflected how it was to be implemented even in the original plan.
But at least when the plan was adopted, it was looking forward to something that wasn't built yet. Whereas now we have the advantage, per se, looking at this from the perspective of a largely built-out area. So let's make it, this is the direction going, and it seems like there are, let's make it read at least in a more accurate manner. That's all I have right now. Thank you. I'm sorry. I didn't see any follow-up on the question I raised last time about the sign ordinance. This going away and our new sign ordinance not being adopted is leaving that window of opportunity if someone wanted to come in and just go for that really tall sign or something. We talked about at the last meeting.
This would default to the current code in the Monroe Code. In fact, there was a reference here somewhere where there is conflicting requirements that it's up to the like the community development director to decide which one applies between the two.
Does the current signed ordinance default to this?
It does reference this as the signed code for North Kelsey, but in the absence of that, when you have the, you almost have a choice of one or the other, according to, if I bring forward a proposal that doesn't meet these guidelines, or doesn't meet these, or doesn't meet, something that doesn't meet, basically meet either code, which one is more restrictive, or which one is the preferable.
Well, there will be one.
I don't think that that decoupling or deleting this will put North Kelsey in limbo in terms of regulations. It will default back to the Monroe Municipal Code.
And what does that say?
Specifically, I don't have the language. I can check on that.
Thank you. That's all.
Okay, thank you. Commissioners, anything else? Any other discussion? Okay, then we'll open the public hearing to the audience. Okay, anybody want to come up and speak? Go ahead. Please come up, give your name, address.
Vicki Mullen, 10312 210th Street Southeast, Snohomish, Washington, 98296.
You promised the testimony yes. You're about to give us a truth?
Yes. Is this the only public testimony that will be heard from the Planning Commission on these changes and everything? Is this it?
We had one meeting, what was it, a couple of weeks ago?
Okay.
3 weeks ago, where we discussed this. It was not a formal public hearing, but, you know, I mean, it was comments could be given at the time. But this is the only formal public hearing before this.
If there's any way possible, if you're not going to take some action on it tonight, I don't know what your plans are, but I would certainly ask that you keep it open if that's a possibility, because I know that there's a lot of other people who probably wanted to comment on it that weren't aware of it. I mean, I think they were so focused on school litigation and some other things that we didn't, I mean, I personally didn't realize this was going to be a public hearing tonight, but it's just, like I said, but anyway, whatever you find. Anyway, I was very, I know this one by heart, I think, and anything that, and regarding signs and what the municipal code is, Dave, you know that one by heart, I think, after 5 years of going through it. Anyway, when it regards to the connectivity between downtown and the North Kelsey project, I personally had that put in. I'm pretty sure I lobbied pretty heavily for that. And at the time, the reason was is to get the people to know that the downtown existed, that the historic downtown existed. And it does still have connectivity. And one of the things that is key is you'll see that the sidewalks that were put in front of Bidell's have the same light posts that are carried off downtown. And that was because of having it in this plan, when DOT went to redo that, they were had to stick with this. And that was one of the reasons that they did them that way. Mm-hmm. So there is that connectivity, and that's part of it. Same with the, so they had to have the flower, the banner brackets on them so that they could do the flowers that connected to it. So that was part of it. So having it in the plan has been great because that did do that. And I don't know if continuing to have it in the plan helps. What was intended was that the downtown would have the maybe its own color scheme, you know, like it has the green lamp poles and they have the bicycle racks and that, and then maybe North Kelsey would end up with its own, but it would continue to have that flavor of having you know, bike racks and having light posts and banners and flowers, and to kind of envisioning the city, you know, how we have our median strips, and, you know, we're known for our flowers and that kind of thing. And so that was part of it, was to have that. And to have the walkability between the two. And I realize now that things have changed. It's become a more of a auto-centric shopping area. But I think we still have a lot of people, and you'll see that going to Fred Meyer a lot, where people walk around town and shop. They live perhaps in a, you know, they're in the downtown area. There are a lot of housing units that are above the buildings. And there's also a lot of people in the older parts of town that do walk. And so to just kind of have that continuity. So anything that was going to be designed, bringing that in there was why I was there. And it has been really, it's worked. So that's been one thing that's worked. And as far as other things, I realize that it's really difficult for a lot of us that work relentlessly on this plan and went over it and put all our little blocks and everything, you know, to try to get it to where it was. You know, we're saddened, of course, by seeing this, but I think there's still some things that were good and that the community wanted in here, and one of those things would be signage. And I hate to see it just automatically resort back to what Monroe Municipal Code is, because, you know, that gets you where you can have off street signage. You can have, so Walmart, for example, it can't now, but if you default to that, they can put a huge big sign up on Highway 2, which I would think they might want to. They don't always have to do that, even if they ask for it. They didn't do it in their Smoky Point area. Walmart put a more clad and lower sign. They didn't go with a single pole sign. So signage in this area doesn't have to resort to electronic sign boards all over. It doesn't have to be, you know, those big electronic things, because that's what it would default to if you don't keep an eye on this. And so I would really at least look at the sign portion of this and not just throw it all out before having something in it. If you do decide you're going to default to the Monroe's overall code for commercial and for those areas, please get a copy of it and see what you could end up with. And see how large you could end up with, because those signs, I think, are based on square footage of properties and that type of thing. You could end up with some huge, giant signs. And one of the things that the Planning Commission in the past and the City Council in the past had struggled with was what is a balance between what businesses need to promote their business and what becomes visually just overkill. And, you know, that's a struggle, because I have business myself. I do like the idea of that. But you can do nice signage that still gives a person the square footage of signage they need without just completely ending up looking like Highway 99. And that's one of the things that was often used. And right now, when people have looked at our town, like Destination Development, some of the other companies that come, they will take pictures of our signage and they will say, don't, you know, this is not good looking, so don't put your entryway or your gateway here, because when you look down, you know, from Highway 522, when you came off the old off-ramp and the first thing you saw was the salt and pepper truck that used to be there and all that signage, they would take pictures of that and use that as, you know, a poor example of signage. So I would just caution you to really look at the signage element of this. Thank you.
Thank you.
And anyone ever has any questions on what it was or what legislative intent was or anything, there's a lot of people that are still around that can give you that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I think I mentioned that next week we're talking about the sign code update. We have hired a consultant who does have some serious expertise in the signage, and I think he can help explain how this will work and how this can be fit into the city code without abandoning all that we have here. That the intent is to simplify, but still keep the basic, I think, intent of this intact. but in a simpler way and within the Monroe Code. He's gone through and done quite a bit of work already. I think we'll have some interesting discussion next week, and we can bring this matter up again.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else have any comments on the North Kelsey design guidelines update? I don't see any hands. Okay, Commission, do you have any discussion on what we have? Can we close the
public? Can I make a motion?
Can we close make a public motion? Testimony? Public testimony.
I make a motion.
Yeah. Chairman Devers, we have a motion to close the public testimony. Do you have a second?
Second.
Commissioner Rodland, second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. It closes the public testimony portion of the public hearing. Now it's up to us to do some deliberation, I guess. Question?
I just want to point out that this is on being taken to council tomorrow night for discussion, and they are scheduled to act on this on November 6th. And part of the reason for this schedule is that next quarter is closing, Jeff, would that be end of this month?
October 31st.
October 31st, next quarter is closing. And there's one guideline specifically in here that would prevent NextCorp from doing their project. That's the one that requires nothing but retail on the first floor. So we are trying to get this complete at least through the first reading of an ordinance prior to the end of the month. But what we could potentially do tonight is take your recommendation, and if you have some specific conditions or recommendations to specific parties, we can carry it to council in that way, so that we acknowledge your specific input on this.
Okay, Commissioner Simmons.
Thank you. Jeff, wasn't that question discussed at council last Tuesday, the timing of this?
The final timing is November 6th, so that's the critical. The critical element is to have this ordinance voted on second reading on November 6th. So I believe that first reading, I think it might be next Tuesday.
I believe the 24th. I believe the first reading is the 23rd.
Okay. Since I recall when council talked about this last week, there were some concerns expressed that forcing us to act on this tonight with a recommendation was perhaps a little too quick, followed by council action tomorrow night.
Right.
And that's, so I think the proper approach would be to make a motion to approve or deny and offer any amendments that you have on your mind tonight, and perhaps do what you did similar to the earlier action, defer deliberations, and maybe allow some other amendments that you'd like to toss on next Monday night.
Final action next week.
Correct.
As suggested as the alternative at the bottom of the staff report.
That's true. We do have a commission meeting before the 23rd council meeting. Frankly, it may have been moved from the 16th to the 23rd, but I believe the council is going to discuss it tomorrow.
I think it got moved.
But not actually. But maybe it did move. Maybe too many things going in and out between commission and council. But in any case, we do have potential for some final recommendations on the 22nd that would have to be carried to the next day of council.
Exactly how much more information can we get by next week, like on the signage, this type of thing? Because it's some more information. Like you say, you have a person that is giving you information on sign stuff.
Well, next week we can have the Tom Beckwith as the consultant. We can have Tom first on the agenda to talk about the sign code update in general, and then specifically how we intend to incorporate North Kelsey into the Monroe Code. These guidelines, if it follows the November 6th second reading, won't become effective until somewhere mid-November or even
For myself, I'd like to have that information before I make a decision. Chairman, I mean, Commissioner Dermis?
I think that not making a final decision recommendation until next week makes sense. It sounds workable, and I think that's what I heard last week in council when I was sitting in on that, too. A couple of comments, if I may?
Sure.
Based on testimony and further thought on my part, listen to that testimony with regard to the bullet under the intent. Anything that I think we can leave in here that might further that long-term goal is good. There's no harm in leaving that language about the connectivity to the downtown in here, and there may be things gained out of it.
Okay.
So I would certainly support that. I think getting rid of the C on the access point that we talked about, it was on pages 46, 47, the mid-chain link road one, cleaning things up there so that it more accurately reflects what we have out here. Revisiting that language about the development, furthering that small town feel of Monroe, because clearly that doesn't exist anymore. And I think lastly, on the signs, one of the things that was mentioned last week, I think exciting fall was 2 weeks ago, was something along the lines of a sunset clause. And why couldn't this section be amended with the signage and lighting section left in it, with language saying that this shall sunset upon adoption of a revised Monroe sign ordinance that includes, that it also addresses this area. And that way then we go forward with this document, it gets modified and adopted, the sign section stays intact. Who knows, the sign ordinance may take another 6 months based on past history. You think some of these are difficult issues for those of you that haven't been through a sign ordinance before, just wait. You talk about confusing.
Yeah, you scheduled it before the end of the year.
Well,
with a consultant on a timeline and budget.
As I recall, Tom's pretty good, but he's got to be really good for that job. So those would be my thoughts at this point, as far as what we do with this. My last comment would be, for me anyway, it's a huge disappointment. And I recognize that we've kind of been forced into this by circumstances, not all of which have been under the city's control, so the economy had a lot to do with it. It was a great plan, I thought. We had great hopes for it, and we've been great for the community, but I also recognize that times have changed. And sorry as I am to say that, I'm going to end up supporting what we do here. So that's all I have right now.
And what we recommend to the city is probably going to be changed when it gets there, too. As it always is.
Okay. Any other discussion?
I sure have some minor edits that I don't think he's gone through here. May I give you this copy or encircle some things, just editing issues?
Okay. Motion for action. And I guess what I'm hearing is it sounds like we're looking to postpone our decision, our recommendation, continuing on until next week. Is that what I'm hearing? And I'll entertain a motion to do that.
I'll make a motion that we continue ZCA 2012-07 North Kelsey Design Guidelines to our next regularly scheduled meeting for action.
Okay. We have a motion.
That was it.
We have a motion. We have a second.
Second.
Okay. Commissioner Demarest makes a motion to continue the hearing to next week. the recommendation, and seconded by Commissioner Rogers. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Okay. Let's see. So, that ends that portion of our meeting. And I'm trying to find my okay, discussion by commissioners and staff. Paul?
A couple of things. The council actually has two public hearings tomorrow night. One has to do with extending the life of a short plat subdivision to match that of a final plat for, I'll call it a regular subdivision, to 7 years total before they expire. We've had one or two requests regarding short plats up to what they're theoretically up to 9 lots that will expire soon, one in particular. We are changing that period so that all plats are now vested for 7 years. And this does sunset, I believe, at the end of 2014. It reverts back to the a total of 3 years before preliminary plat expires. And the other is for Roosevelt Road rezoning. That's coming back to council. And actually, one subdivision that we did receive some plans for just Friday is called Bear Mountain, and it is just west of the foothills. It's in the very southeast corner, 20 acres of that Roosevelt Road. If you recall, it's a rectangle or triangle, I think about 70 acres, but a subdivision for about 60 to 70 lots in that southeast corner. What appeared to be pretty extensive wetlands in that part of the property turned out to be not the case. In the field work, in actuality, there's quite a bit less wetland area than was shown on these schematic maps, but they have put together a preliminary plat. We also got a submittal on Eaglemont, which is north of Sinclair Heights, west of Chain Lake Road, about 35 acres, and that has about 115 lots, I believe. We talked about sign code. Two other subdivisions, Parish Place, which is just south of Sinclair Heights, was a distressed subdivision that was fully entitled for construction. They are building that now, have been for the last few weeks. Last one is, which way is
Dennis Way?
Dennis Way, just to the west and north, 26 lots. It's south of 159th Street, infill area there. Rick Hansen is building 26 single-family homes in there under construction. Just started. So there's some activity up there. So 22nd, we have sign code and one more.
I'm not sure what's on the agenda.
Oh, I've got it blank now. We published it. It'll be published tomorrow.
So, Paul, just those four plats, you was that's about 250 lots right there, is well out of the process.
Right. Now, what happens after that? There's nothing else on the horizon. So we may have hit a spike, so that it may be quiet for quite some time before we see any more. Rick Hansen's project, he plans to build and sell about one house a month, so that could take a couple of years. Eaglemont is 5-6 years or more for total build-out. And Bear Mountain, I'm thinking maybe 3-4 years.
They certainly wouldn't want it all to come out in line and be going through in 2 years. That would not be good for the market either.
No.
Okay. And done it, Paul?
I'm done. Thank you.
Commissioner Dunn?
No, thank you.
Commissioner Demers?
Two things. The fees that you passed out to us this evening here, as an example, the building permit, looks like it adds up to about $23,700. If I do my math right, total fees for a in-town resident?
I'm not sure.
Yes, and I did forget to include another printout for the traffic mitigation fees, which are not on this sheet. But those are $21.58. So that I got a total of $24,669.
Okay. Say $25,000.
Yeah.
For a single family home.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's a valuation $194, looks like. And the fees, obviously, and some of the fees will vary based on valuation, but not hugely. Thank you. This is great. Appreciate it. Another thing, when it goes to rules of procedure, if I could just get a reminder, and maybe some others might appreciate the clarification. We are, in both actions tonight, in the middle of the process. We've closed the public testimony. We haven't taken final action on those items. What are the rules as far as us talking to anyone over the next week?
Jeff and I were talking about that during the break, and we're going to check and see exactly what the procedure is.
So you'll tell us
exactly what
is
allowed. So we'll let you know.
So in the meantime,
well, this is a legislative action that you're taking. It's not a quasi-judicial action, so you're open to discuss this with any constituents that you'd like to discuss it with.
No, the reason for the zoning issue is the Monroe Municipal Code. Isn't that a quasi-judicial?
It's not quasi-judicial.
It is. Okay. All right. Good enough. Thank you. That's all I have.
The second item next week?
Yes.
Schools. And continuing from tonight. School mitigation fees.
Okay, yes.
That I went ahead and posted it for next week's agenda, which we sent out last week, assuming that it could very well continue to next week. So those are the two items, signs and schools.
Okay. Yeah, I saw that on the agenda. Commissioner Sherwood?
Nothing.
I have nothing, so I'll entertain and
I'll second.
Okay. Motion made by Commissioner Rodling to adjourn, seconded by Commissioner Demers. Then.
Do we vote?
Oh, all favor say aye. All opposed.
And well done, Vice Chair.
Keep that.